I'm delighted to share my first series is in partnership with Heck, who, like me, do things differently. Being an independent and British family-owned business, they use the finest ingredients in small batches, pulling out all the stops to bring that farmer's market quality to the supermarket shelf. In addition to their delicious original range, they offer veggie options too, catering for absolutely everyone, all of which can be found online at heckfood.co.uk and in the major supermarkets too. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to simplify nutrition, equipping you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, Harley Street nutritionist, master practitioner, personal trainer, and best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well. I'm so excited to share my vision of food far beyond the confines of my clinic. I truly believe food should always be a positive aspect of life, offering enjoyment, fuel, and happiness for both the mind and body. I'll be joined by some very special guests, and we'll be talking about how to develop a healthy relationship with food, and what does that even mean? How does it make us feel, and how it can change our lives forever? Ronnie O'Sullivan, OBE, is widely regarded as the most talented snooker player in history. In his 25 years in the game, Ronnie has won 5 world championships, 33 titles, and continues to dominate the sport at the age of 42. Nicknamed the Rocket for his rapid playing style, he holds the record for the fastest recorded maximum 147. Ronnie has been open about his struggles with drugs and depression throughout his career, and has written 2 autobiographies in which he describes how he turned to running to remain focused and fit. Away from snooker, he's a father of 3 and a best-selling crime novelist. And having first met Ronnie in my clinic just over a year ago now, I am so lucky not only to call him a dear friend of mine, but co-author of a book we've written together, which is out next year, called Top of Your Game, Eating for the Mind and Body. Hello, Ronnie.
How you doing, Rhiannon? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm so glad I managed to get you up to London. I know that's a big ask.
Well, it is at the moment, because I've kind of just kicked back the last 2 or 3 months. Yeah. I've been at home just sort of like re-energising, if you like.
Re-energising. Yeah, love re-energizing. The use of word. I mean, I think you're very open and honest from your battles with drugs, depression, becoming the public profile that you've got now as a snooker player. You're constantly under pressure to perform. And how do you think your relationship with food has evolved?
I think I've always been a great lover of food because of my mum's Sicilian background. So ever since I was a young kid, it was always proper food. You know, there was none of this pre-packed meals. You know, I used to like have a little bit of sneaky ready-made mash with a powder. Yeah. I was only like 10, and that was just it was a quick meal before I went to the snooker club.
Yeah.
But basically, a proper meal for me was homemade lasagna, pasta, chicken, fillet steak, proper veg.
Yeah.
All cooked with garlic, herbs. I mean, you'd open my mum's front door and you'd go, whoa, the smell of garlic would just woof through the house.
I loved the smell of garlic.
I loved it. I used to think, oh, it's so good to be home.
Yeah.
And so I've always been a lover of good food.
Mm.
But then obviously you move out your mum's house.
Mm-hmm.
She then goes, well, I'm not your servant. I'm not your cook and cleaner. So then you kind of have to find ways to kind of, how do I keep having good food in my life? So I've learned to cook. And then obviously working with you was great, because then I started to look at food in a nutritional way rather than just seeing it as like, oh, that's food and I'm hungry and I'm going to eat that and not know sometimes, you know, why I felt sluggish and tired and maybe gaining weight that I didn't want to gain.
Yeah.
Now I kind of can be much more, more mathematical about how I'm eating there and eat certain foods to get a certain result, you know.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I know snooker isn't like, I'm not running like Usain Bolt or doing...
Well, you're quite a runner
like
still.
Mo Farah, but you still like, you want to feel good, you know,
and
good food makes you feel good.
I love that. Good food does make you feel good. I mean, when we first discussed your nutrition, I remember you being puzzled that despite the fact you were actually running over 40 miles a week, you kept on putting the weight on. I remember when you came to me, like, what is going on? I've got these injuries. I'm gaining weight. What were you doing around that time?
I was still eating good food, but I remember when you said to me, well, tell me what you actually eat. And I went, well, I've just come back from Bulgaria. The food was fantastic out there. I says, and I know olives are good for you. So I said, I'm eating a lot of the olives and stuff. And you went, well, how many did you eat? And I said, oh, I ate 29. You went, well, you really only meant to eat 8 at a serving. Yeah. I was like, okay. So basically I was eating 4 times the amount of what I probably should have been. And I'm one of them, my eyes are too big for my belly, so I'll eat and eat and eat until I think I can't eat no more. But actually,
I think it was the avocado I really remember.
Avocado, I was on 2 or 3 of them a day.
I remember, high fat, low carb, wasn't it?
Low carb, and then I lost my mind where I couldn't concentrate on even the conversation that someone's having. And then it was only when you said to me, oh, carbs feed the brain. I was like, really? So that kind of all like made sense why I was feeling a bit, feeling really poorly, really.
Yeah, and I think you're not really alone there. I think because everyone sees these types of foods as being so good for you, you know, like olives, avocados, like the 2 examples we've listed. So everyone out there would, of course, naturally think, well, the more of them I eat, the better.
Yeah.
But there's still portion control in everything. Yeah. I mean, we were even looking at the size of your hands and using easy guides because once you started to know how much to put on your plate, it really changed, didn't it, from how much you were eating before?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it was, you know, I found, you know, I can get like we do the 3 meals a day and the 2 snacks.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, I'm not sure, I probably could get away with 3 meals in a day, but I just find that sometimes them snacks and a glass of water just carry me through nicely. So as when I get to my next meal, I'm not starving, but I know it's time to eat. And
yeah,
I know
totally.
That once I've eaten that, it just kind of stabilizes me.
You just feel better. And I think because you were running so much, it was really confusing because you can't out-train, you know, a bad diet, can you?
No.
And that's the biggest thing because you were, I mean, you're a really good runner.
Yeah, decent. Yeah, and I'm still pretty decent. Yeah. But I think like I said with you, it was you got me looking at more like portion control sizes and sort of cutting out certain stuff in, you know, learning how to read food labels and certain foods to eat. And I've kind of like took it on board and, you know, I feel fantastic for it. I feel better physically and I feel better mentally as well.
It's amazing to hear that. And I think, was there ever like a pivotal moment that made you think that now is the time to start this? Like, what was the real turning point?
I think I was in China and I was trying to get myself fit, so I was training and I was I was sweating a lot as well. So I'd finish a match and my shirt, you could literally wring it out.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's no good because I've had times where I haven't had to do that, but I was really fit, so I knew I was maybe a bit overweight or carrying a bit too much fat. And then I remember like being in a match. I was in the quarterfinals and I was 4-1 up and I should have won it. I didn't win the match, but he was there for the taking. And I just remember feeling really lethargic.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, what a horrible time to feel like that. And
just when you need to switch on.
Yeah. And then I kind of like about a month later, I come to see you and then we started talking about it and you just, and it kind of made sense that once I started eating well, I've got to be honest with you, I haven't had one day since eating well where I haven't had energy. There's been times where I've been overtired through training, and I know that feeling. That's different.
Oh, yeah.
That's different to just hitting a dull spot.
Cool.
But through, you know, by eating well and training right and doing all that, I literally don't have a day where I feel like I'm dropping in energy. So for me as a sportsman, that's great.
It's incredible. And I think even you just sharing that you can be at that match, that was a big moment for you. Remember being 4-1 up and then suddenly you just, you don't know where the match kind of went.
Yeah, well, I know why I lost and it wasn't good. And it kind of like, and I thought, I don't really want to kind of like lose. I don't mind losing if I'm outplayed, but losing where you're kind of losing energy and feeling tired, and if there's something that you can do about it to not make yourself feel tired, then why wouldn't you do that?
Well, that's just it. And I think we spent such a long time together busting myths, and now you've kind of found your balance. How did you first get drawn into these like unhealthy diets or these kind of things we were doing before?
Well, like I said, because when I used to run like 35 miles a week, I could probably, like my portion control, I could get away with probably eating double what I do now.
Yeah.
So it was fine, you know, yeah. But once I couldn't, and I was still training maybe 3-4, you know, I was running 15 miles a week in the gym a bit. So it wasn't like I was inactive.
No.
But I just found myself putting on weight. And what it was basically that it wasn't that I was eating so much of the wrong stuff. There probably was a bit of that as well. But it was just the portion control. Yeah. You know, I thought as long as if it's healthy, then it must mean you can eat as much as you like.
I know.
It's not actually the case. So I've kind of had to relearn that side of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I struggle with it because I just want to pig out. And I just think, oh, but I don't.
Do.
I go, have a snack, da-da-da. And then again, I do let myself go.
Yeah.
But I'm very quickly, the next day, back on it. And I have a good week, good 2 weeks. So, you know, it's...
I mean, I think you've got a great balance. That's one thing I really see with you now is how far you've kind of come on your own journey. And it's remarkable. And I remember you showing me or telling me about what you'd eat at the Chinese or something. Mm. And I remember seeing that kind of spread of food. And now you allow yourself what you enjoy, but you'd never have the same quantities. But we also had the injuries as well. Do you remember? I mean, we're looking at... I think overtraining is something that is also not often thought of as a problem.
Mm.
People see it as, go you, you're going for it, you're going for it. How did you, I mean, was that a struggle cutting that down a bit and changing your mindset?
Yeah, well, it helped because once I started, because I didn't change, I thought, well, I'm not going to change the, when I come to see you, I thought, well, I'm not going to change any of the exercise that I'm doing. I just want to see what difference the food plan makes.
Yeah.
And I noticed within 2 months, I'd lost, or maybe 2-3 months, I can't remember exactly what it was. I'd lost a stone and
a half.
Yeah,
you did.
So I knew it was the food. I knew it wasn't because I was training better or more.
Mm.
I thought, let's just stick to that, let's just change the food, and you know, and once I convinced myself that to me convinced me that it was mostly food.
Yeah.
And if you get that right, then you can be the, you know, have the body shape and feel 100%. You know how you want to be.
Totally.
So, but it was only I think about a week and a half ago I got into overtraining again, and it was I just kind of got this little urge to think I want to get back into running again, and I overdone it, and again I got to the semi-finals of a tournament. And I hit a dead spot where it wasn't to do with food. It was just I'd overtrained, I'd overrun,
and I
knew that tiredness. And I lost the match. And, you know, I was a bit disappointed, but I wasn't that bothered, really.
Mm.
But it just shows you, you know, that a little bit of overdoing that overtraining.
I know.
You know, if you've got nothing to do for 2 or 3 days, you just sit on the couch and recover.
Yeah.
But when you've got to go and play semi-finals of a major tournament, it wasn't good.
And that's one thing that we focus on a lot is that your mind and your mental state is just as important as the physical kind of stuff. And people underestimate what a big impact that can have. And I mean, you're also forever going back and forth to China, and I know you absolutely love it out there. But how are you managing to maintain your kind of healthy, balanced diet when you're away from home now? Because I know you're here with me today. You've actually got your lunch on the table with your Heck sausages, haven't you?
Yeah, which my is ironic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always like to carry food with me. So if I go to China,
yeah,
I take my peanut butter, I take my snacks, I take a few tins of tuna, a few tins of sweet corn, some kidney beans.
You're so good.
They're just my snacks. So if I'm out there and I'm in the room and I think I'm not hungry, but I know that I should have something before I have my dinner in maybe 2 hours, a snack on it, so it's less chance of me eating.
And that's so cheap and affordable. Like, I don't think people think to put stuff like that as a snack.
Yeah.
Like they think I have to buy some packaged bar or I have to get some expensive, healthy thing. But a pack of beans or like sweet corn, like you said, or something, a tin.
Yeah.
So affordable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I find you can just snack your way through the day sometimes. You
totally.
You know, I don't have to like have big meals, and I'd rather just eat little and often.
Yeah.
Sort of,
that's
sort
what
way.
Works for you. And I know you said you would love to live in China one day.
Yeah.
Does that still stand?
I love China. I love the culture. I love the people. And, you know, I do spend some of my time out there. I mean, I can't do the backwards and forward to all the tournaments because there's like 7-8 tournaments there, and that's 7-8 long trips a year. So I probably pick like 1 or 2 events a year that I'll go there. I love being there. You know, got great culture, great food.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's probably somewhere that, because of work and stuff like
that.
And friends I got there.
And Chinese food isn't what it is here, is it?
No, it's very different. So they have like a hot pot out there. I don't know if you've ever had hot pot before.
No, I haven't.
But it's basically like a pot that they put in the middle of the table.
Okay.
And there's a heating system that comes up. So it's like boiling water.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, they bring your meat and your fish and your vegetables and you kind of cook it yourself. So,
that's
you know,
so
like
cool.
Where you put, you have like a little basket where you put your chips in.
Yeah.
Well, they put that in the water. So you put
your
food
good.
In
You're
that and it
the,
boils
yeah,
in the
yeah,
water.
Yeah.
And then you have your little bit of soy sauce and spicy sauces, garlic on the side that you make up yourself.
That's so lean compared to here
it
where
is,
it's drenched in oil.
Oh, honestly, it's so lovely, honestly. It's such a great
live like that.
Hot pot is such a great way to eat.
Yeah. Where can we go in London for hot pot, Ronnie? We need to find some.
I'll have a look and I'll find you. I think there's one in Sheffield, but wherever there's a heavily populated Chinese community,
you'll
probably find a hot pot because it's really popular in China.
Okay, Sheffield, that's on the cards then, definitely. Yeah. Do you have a kind of day routine that's the key to your success? And I'm sure a lot of people ask you this, but you know, you're up against people that are half your age and you're still winning. You are, let's be fair, you're doing incredibly well. Mm. What is the routine before the game to get you in that state of mind?
I probably don't, because I'm sort of trained in a way over the years to be disciplined, so it's not like I have to. You just become that person in a way, you know. You just switch on and switch off at certain points. Probably for me, I have to go really against the grain, so I try to not put so much importance on anything.
Yeah,
because I think if you try and sort of get over ready for something, then you kind of start to put more importance on it than you should. Really, I just try to treat every match like I'm going down the club to practice.
That's so good. No superstitions.
No.
Yeah.
I used to have some superstitions, and it wasn't a good way to work.
I think they're quite scary, aren't they?
Yeah, because you're kind of like, you know, I don't know. I just kind of like, as soon as something goes wrong, you can kind of think, well, that's it. Today's not going to be my day. Whereas I'd just rather just go with the flow.
Yeah.
You know, just treat every moment.
Well, definitely.
Give it its merit, sort of thing.
You've got the kind of best attitude. And I'm sure, do you get asked a lot of the time by younger players, you know, like, how do you do it? Are they constantly asking for tips and tricks?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of them do. Yeah, you know, a lot of the Chinese, they're always watching you. Like I used to watch Stephen Hendry. I used to try and pick up on stuff like him. And, you know, I'm sure they do. But, you know, if they want it bad enough, then they're prepared to be open-minded to learn stuff. But, you know, you get so focused on what you have to do that sometimes all you can do is lead by example, and hopefully the ones that want it can watch. And I think you learn a lot by watching other people.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I didn't even think I was going to ask you. But would you ever one day, maybe in the future, set up like a training school, or is that not?
I think I'd rather become a running coach than a snooker coach, to be honest with you. Although snooker's been a great sort of thing for me.
Yeah.
I just think that at some point when I finish playing snooker, I just want to kind of like, not get away with it completely. A pundit, a commentary, that'd be great because I love to watch the game.
Yeah, your commentary's good. It's good fun.
But I'm not sure I'd want to kind of have that responsibility of sort of living and breathing the sport again through somebody else's performances.
Mm. No, that's a very interesting point.
So for me, I think I would like to become more a running coach.
Yeah.
It's outdoors, it's fresh air, it's something I love.
And I
sometimes think, to become a good coach, you shouldn't have been good at the sport. So if you look at football managers, the best ones weren't really good players.
Yeah.
And you look at some of the snooker coaches, the best ones don't even really know how to play snooker.
Mm.
They just have patience with their client. And I just think for me to be a snooker coach, I'd just get too frustrated. I'd be like, why can't you do this?
I actually appreciate your honesty with that, because I think that is such a good point.
Mm.
It kind of rings true to me as well. It's like, if you're going to work with somebody, that they should be you should be able to compliment them and support them and help them. And if you always had that in the back of your mind, it's probably not a great,
So I think running coach would be better than me, because I'm not a great runner, but I have a great love for the sport.
Well, you take your kids running as well.
I mean, my daughter's quite good, and I take them running over the forest. And I'm going to try and get her to do a junior park run.
Really?
I was a volunteer this Sunday at the junior park run, which was one
amazing.
Of the best. It was brilliant. It was like 60 kids turned up.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant just to be part of it, you know.
Well, your daughter's also into her food as well, isn't she? So we've had her in the kitchen cooking away. She's really, really good.
Yeah, I tried to make them like mindful of whatever they're putting in, and they're really good. I mean, sometimes I test them and I go, you know, you had this, do you want a cake, do you want this? And she's like, no, I've had one biscuit. And I'm like, that's really good. I mean, with me, I'd eat the old packet.
Yeah.
You know, but her, she's sort of like, she's quite smart. And
she's
like,
got good role models. It's great. Mm. And you're a fan of spicy food. I mean, I'll never forget when you made me that curry.
Oof.
And I literally I couldn't even swallow it. It was so spicy. It tasted amazing. It was just really, really hot. So have you always experimented with different types of cuisines?
I started off learning to cook Chinese because one of my friends was from Hong Kong and he was a very, very good cook. So my first sort of stuff that I started cooking was Chinese food.
Okay.
Which was great, but there was so much prepping involved.
Oh my gosh, there's so many ingredients, aren't there? Like different
it's just a lot of prepping. I mean, the cooking time takes like 1 or 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you've got the time, then it's okay to prep. But, you know, I've quite a busy person, and I sometimes think I haven't got the time to just do it. So
yeah.
I've kind of started to learn to cook more Indian sort of food, because you can just throw the spices in, put it all in.
You've got that palette of, I remember in your house, you've got that amazing spices palette, haven't you? Who was it that gave you that?
My best friend George, his mum, who's from Sri Lanka, and she just cooks loads of curries.
Incredible.
And I wanted to learn to cook a curry, and he went, right, my mother-in-law will show you. So she came around my friend's mum's house, and we just sat there all day cooking fish curries, chicken curries and stuff like that.
Day of curries.
So and I just thought it's just so easy to cook.
100%.
Throw it in a pan, 25 minutes, job done, and you've got food for 2 days.
Well, I couldn't agree more, because food prep's a really important thing, and you're really hot on your food prep now. So you're always so organised.
Yeah.
Because I think last time you even had a, what was it you'd made, the green, it was frozen, you'd made a batch of frozen kind of spices or something that we used.
That's right. So I had to put my gingers, my chilli, my garlic, so rather than have to cut it all up and mash it all up, I just stick it all in a pot and stick it in the freezer and just take it out as a use. So,
I was genuinely so impressed, Ronnie, because you were the first client that's ever used that much initiative when I visit their kitchen.
Oh, really?
Yes. I was like, wow, this is really good. So we now have lots of questions from followers.
Yeah.
You probably get them a lot, but I'm going to reel off a few of the top ones that stood out here. They're quite interesting. So let's see what you have to say. So from Andy, we have, you threaten to retire all the time. Mm. What is it that makes you love and hate the game so much?
I suppose in a way, you know, the highs that I get from the game are so high that you just think, I just know that, you know, it's too hard to give up. The lows become quite low sometimes, because you think, I know what I'm capable of, and if I'm not performing, then you can, you know, it borders on the line of frustration. So you kind of have that, like, I love it one day, and when things are going great, and I don't mean...
It's down to you, isn't it? The pressure's on your shoulders, either way.
Not, it's not so much the pressure, but it's just the feeling of playing the perfect, not even the perfect game, but just playing, you know, playing to a certain level where you think it's acceptable. And sometimes I've won tournaments where I thought it wasn't acceptable, and everyone's like, you know, you played great. I'm like, well, it didn't feel great. So it's kind of more about, it's more from a selfish perspective, really, that if I feel like I'm enjoying
I wouldn't even call that selfish, Ronnie. I just think that you're actually being honest and in tune with how you're really feeling. So a lot of people out there probably feel exactly the same way, but they don't speak about it.
Which I find quite strange, really, because, like, you know, I think if you know, if you've won and you've not performed great, you should be okay to say, well, I know I got a result, but, you know, I'm more of a, like, I say an artist in a way that I kind of, it's not always about the end product, it's more about the process. And if I've enjoyed the game, you know, sometimes I come off and I've lost the game, but I've really enjoyed it and I've come off buzzing.
It's so
you know,
good.
I can't wait to get to the next match. You know,
it's so good, because it's not always about winning, is it, for you? It's about
really
how you play.
Not really. I always find winning is a byproduct of performing well. If you perform well, then I always think results will take care of itself. If I was results driven, then I probably wouldn't have tried to play to the level that I've played. I just think, well, what have I got to do to get over the line? And sometimes winning and playing well are two totally different things. I've won many tournaments not playing well. So winning and playing well, very different. You know, you're either, you know, you, I think I'm a winner, and there's a few people on the circuit that are winners. But playing well is a different thing altogether.
Well, that's coming from a true champ, I would say. What a very, very good answer there for Andy. So Jonathan has said, players are always trying to slow your game down. How do you overcome it?
I don't really know, really. I think you just have to be, you have to be relaxed. You have to be calm. You have to kind of, you know, not get too wrapped up in your emotions sometimes. You know, you have to kind of wait for your moment, because they might be doing certain things that they think might be slowing you down, but in fact, you know, you just have to kind of wait for your moment to then pounce. And then, you know what, you know, the way I look at it is, if an opponent's trying to slow me down, he's probably going to spend an hour to win two frames, whereas if when I get my chance, I can win six frames in an hour. So I just kind of think, well, let him have his moment, I'll just have to be patient to get my moment. So
that's quite a skill, being patient.
Yeah, you have to be, you know. Yeah. I mean, Steve Peters has learnt me that as well. You know, sometimes I used to get really frustrated if it didn't happen immediately. But he said, you know, sometimes it's just, it is fickle. So, you know, from one moment to the next, a lot can happen, a lot can change.
Advice,
you keep that, like, a little bit of open-mindedness when you're out there, then you've got a chance.
Well, that's the thing. And you've also got a clear head. And John has actually said, I'm definitely a better player when I'm drunk? I'm not sure about that, John. But he said, do you recommend having a drink before playing?
Personally, I don't
drink.
But I do know some players that feel a little bit better if they have a couple of drinks. Mm. I know some of the dart players drink quite a lot, but that's part of their culture, I think, growing up in pubs and stuff like that. But as far as a snooker player, I'm not really sure drinking's the way to go. But if you're doing it for fun and just for a few frames with your mates down the club, then
it's different, isn't
it?
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, no, it's a good answer there, Ronnie. Thank you. Danny has said, why don't you want your children playing snooker?
I don't mind them playing for fun. I mean, and I love snooker. I just kind of not too in love with the snooker world, you know. Mm. So, yeah, I'd rather them do something else. But obviously, if that's what they wanted to do, then you can't stop them. But having been through a career of playing snooker, I'd hate them. To have to relive it again. Probably from a selfish point of view again.
And protection, I think, there. Part of being a parent, definitely. So the last question we got from one of your followers is from Max. And he said, when you aim, is it a pure instinct or is it something that you have to process, like working out the angles, like a numbers kind of thing?
In tournaments, it becomes instinctive because you shouldn't really be thinking about anything other than just to pot the ball, really. But in practice, obviously, you're always tinkering around and you're trying to work out why certain things happen. And that's why it's called practice, because that's where you try different things out.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the match table, then you have to kind of block everything out and go, right, I'm here, you know, and I've just got to try and win the game and then it becomes more of a mental sort of game where you're trying to clear your mind and play from a free mind, really.
Incredible. That's one of the things where I know when we were working nutritionally anyway, so the mind, and that's where we're writing our next book next year, is all about how we fuel your body and your mind, because people just underestimate how much you can get from it and what you need. You need it every single day. And it's not like, I think it was something Lisa said when we had Lisa Snowden on. She said, if you've hurt your head, you can't just go and get a plaster and put it back on, you know, because your mind is something that we actually have to soothe and heal and work on ourselves. It's something that we just don't do enough.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So we are now moving on to my favourite part of the podcast, which is the quickfire round. Okay, Ronnie, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. All right. What is always in your fridge?
Hummus.
Oh, good. You can only have one kitchen gadget. What would it be?
Frying pan.
This is quick. This is good. Signature homemade dish?
Curry.
Yes. Favourite restaurant?
The Ivy.
Nice. One food you can't live without?
Fish.
I love
fish.
You can't live without fish.
Can't live without fish.
Strangest food you've ever eaten?
Bull's testicle.
Oh my gosh, where was that?
China.
Okay, there you go.
Normal day in China.
Did you order that?
No.
I just
felt a bit confident and thought, I'll try this and try that. And then they told me afterwards.
What did it taste like?
It tasted all right. Okay. Best thing on the table.
There you go. And what is your go-to healthy dish in a rush?
I'd have to say probably an omelette.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good answer.
Yeah, probably an omelette.
Yeah, definitely. Who is your biggest cooking inspiration?
My biggest cooking inspiration would probably have to be my mum, I think.
I love that answer.
Yeah, I think my mum. I've learned a lot from her.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you grew up with all that amazing food.
Yeah. She's made me confident about cooking food, you know.
That's incredible. What is your favourite childhood treat?
Childhood treat would have been... I used to like them mousses that you used to get at Tesco's with the cream on the top. But then it wasn't like mousse, it was more like a... it was nice. I can't remember the name of them.
I can't remember those.
Yeah, they're still out now.
Are they still out now.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. I mean, going for years. They're just one of them that,
Oh, I know what to get you for Christmas.
Beautiful.
What is the last thing you tried for the first time?
Last thing you tried for the first time.
It gets everyone thinking, this
Maybe
one.
Maybe frozen berries.
Really?
Frozen berries is great. Good, yeah.
Oh, that I'm so proud with that answer. That's brilliant. and that wraps up the episode today. But before we finished, with every single guest, we asked them what their food for thought is. So to give you an example, I admit to not yet watching an entire game of snooker, but I get, when you're playing, I do get pretty much all the way through, nearly. I always make sure I watch the end as well. So I might be in and out of the kitchen. But concentrating, like we were saying, so what's interesting is our ability to concentrate and focus comes from an adequate supply of energy, as we've discussed, is blood glucose to the brain. And in fact, the brain uses 20% of all energy needed by the body. So the glucose in our blood comes from all carbohydrates we eat, foods including fruit, veg, cereals, bread, rice, potatoes, sugars, lactose in milk, you name it. Eating breakfast and regular meals containing some carbs ensure you'll have high enough glucose in the blood. So healthier sources of carbs include whole grains, fruit and veg, and not having enough glucose in the blood can make us feel weak, tired, that we've discussed as well, and maybe fuzzy-minded. So my food for thought is to really think about concentration and think about the fuel you're putting into your body. What would your food for thought be if you could leave the listeners with one thing today? It could be anything.
I think it's to get a healthy balance on your plate. So
nice.
Like you say, you have the carbs, the protein, and a little bit of fats.
Amazing.
I just find that if you get all three of them in, you've kind of covered every base.
Yeah. Yep.
And then off the top of that, you kind of like, you've got a good base, then you can kind of get away with.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think, you know, my mistake was not getting enough carbs at one stage and just feeling really bad for it.
Yeah.
But not knowing why. But now amazing. I know why, that, you know, you probably need a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And like you say, you know, when you talk about a lot of these vegans going vegan, unless you do it properly, it can
be
quite dangerous.
Of course. People
so unless you're an expert on food or you've got an expert advising you, I think the best thing for a layman's person is just to try and get a little bit of protein, carbs and fats in your
love
meal.
It. Yeah.
And then you're kind of, you should be okay.
Yeah, there we go. You've heard it from Ronnie himself. So I can't thank you enough, Ronnie, for giving up your time to share all of that with us. I mean, your story is pretty much, it's just inspiring. And I know that you've got other things out there and books and things that people can go and read. You've actually got another one, haven't you, at the moment coming out?
Yeah, The Break comes out on the 15th of November.
Very exciting.
So yeah, it's all based in Soho as well. So this is like a second home for me, Randy.
Amazing.
Really.
Yeah, we're recording in Soho at the moment. So thank you so much for coming on with me today, Ronnie, and have a lovely rest of your day.
Thanks for having me on, Rhiannon.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll absolutely love my next guest. So click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And remember, a bit of extra guidance and advice may be all it takes to help you become the healthiest and happiest version of you. In my part handbook and part recipe book, Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, you can follow the structure of a session with me in clinic, gaining the confidence you need to create delicious, nourishing meals at home with my Renourish menu. Check it out on Amazon or all major bookshops. For more information about me, my clinic, recipes, events, health retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. A great burger needs to stand on its own. That means the burger has to taste good naked. Whether it's a fried egg on top, spicy mayo, or even peanut butter, these should complement the burger, not define it. And when you don't have a bun lying around, you should try Heck Spring Chicken Burgers. Check out heckfood.co.uk or the major supermarket. Spiced up with spring onions, chili, and ginger. It's a little bit different to your classic burger, but delicious on a bed of noodles with some homemade sweet chili sauce. Just blend a few peppers, chili, tomato, garlic, and ginger before bringing the mixture to the boil in a saucepan until the sauce thickens.